I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This is part four in an August four-part special with Jack Howard.
Hello, it's the final part.
Final part.
We made it.
And me doing our countdown of our 10 best and worst films of the first half of 2021. I bent the rules slightly because I went into July for Summer of Soul for my number one spot for best films. Yours was Inside, which was the Bo Burnham TV special, which actually I think technically is a film anyway.
We bent the rules because I'm talking about things I've seen, regardless of whether or not
exactly. And anyway, there are rules. It's my podcast. It's our podcast. You don't like it? There's plenty of other podcasts. Go listen to one of them.
If anybody gets mad,
yes,
you haven't paid attention. This doesn't make sense.
Dear podcast world, I was very upset. Anyway, so now we're going to do number five to number one of our least favourite films or TV programmes of the first half of the year.
These are all films for me now.
Great, okay. We may still end up...
Oh, no, I'm wrong. Okay. No, there's one TV show.
Right, I'm going to leap straight in. So for number five for me of the worst things that I've seen in the first half of 2021, Little Things. And the reason I'm going for the Little Things is it features the worst Jared... Is it Leto or Leto?
Leto. Go for either.
Yeah, performance I have ever... I mean... It is eye-rollingly terrible. And he plays this character who's kind of like, oh, it's a bit Charles Manson, a bit straight, or is he? And, you know, is he a creepy serial kid? So the way that he has shown us that his character is creepy is that he's put on some weight and his hair's a bit manky.
Ooh.
And it's, ooh, you know, because as we all know, people who are a little bit overweight and their hair is a bit manky are probably serial
killers. You can't trust them.
It's terrible. And he was nominated for a Golden Globe. We all know the Golden Globes. I'd like to take this opportunity to say, yes, everyone now realises just how corrupt the Golden Globes are. I was saying it first. I was saying it for years. I was telling you all for years the Golden Globes were run by a bunch of unaccountable bozos who were absolutely buyable in every possible sense. Jared Leto's performance in Little Things, which is a nonsensically stupid crime, you know, psychological thriller that's so full of its own stuff happening. I don't care, and I hate that performance. That's my number five.
Something I gotta know. How's a guy with the best clearance rate in the department work 15 years without a promotion?
Maybe I didn't go to the right church.
When I look in your eyes, what I see, it ain't good.
Details, but he wasn't within 10 miles of the killing.
Why is that? Why is that?
How's the trunk space?
What do you want?
I want to nail the bastard.
For who?
For all of the girls he killed.
I want to nail the bastard too. Difference is, I'm doing it for me.
It's the little things, Jimmy. It's the little things that rip you apart. It's the little things that get you caught.
We spoke recently about Blade Runner versus Blade Runner 2049, yes. And now I prefer 2049. I just think it's stunning. But every time that Jared Leto's on screen, I have to just sort of like swallow and accept that's what it is. He just annoys me.
Yeah.
His presence annoys me in most things. The best thing he's ever done is get beaten up in Fight Club.
He currently occupies the space previously occupied by Timothée Chalamet, which is, I'm sure you're very good, but could you just stop?
Do you not like Timothée Chalamet?
No, that's fine. No, I think for certain rules,
he might get
Chalamet,
to that point.
He might. Okay, fine. What's your number five?
Okay, so I'm going to say that my number five is Black Widow.
Oh, okay.
And again, it's not because I hated it. It's because I found it kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
It should have come out 5 or 6 years ago. I think Marvel have drastically messed around with the Black Widow character from the beginning of her introduction in Iron Man 2. We've been begging for a single, you know,
standalone
film for her for a long, long time, and we're getting it now after, spoilers, we know that she's absolutely dead.
Yeah, she's as dead as it is possible to be in the Marvel universe.
Yes. There might be a way to bring her back, but currently she's very dead. It's such a shame because it could have been something really, really great, especially if it fit in where they've put it, which is just after the Civil War stuff. Yeah, I just didn't really think it handled any of it very well. I thought it, from the beginning, I was like, oh, it's like a Jason Bourne kind of thing, but with Black Widow. And then it just goes off the rails and becomes the storyline of it, the espionage storyline, and what's revealed becomes very, like, I'm going to say sci-fi, but loose sci-fi. I mean, the ending confrontation with Ray Winston is, you can't punch me because I smell. A weird frigging thing to put in there. It's just so odd.
Somebody else pointed out, breaking your nose like that doesn't stop you smelling. It's like, you know, this conversation is happening in Skybase, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're like up in the air, but the thing comes and we went, yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You smash your nose at that, it doesn't work.
The ending as well, like the CGI sort of falling from the sky thing, it was just like so like typical Marvel stuff that I was like, no, this is not what I want. People think that some Marvel, I would say I'm a Marvel fan, I'm absolutely that we are more critical of DC than we should be.
Yeah.
No,
like, it's not true.
I think that, you know, the smashy, crashy visual effects stuff that Marvel does as well also needs to be reined in, and I think this is like it's too much, it's too big. She's a human, she's not a superhero. Like, how is she getting away with all this sort of stuff? It's insane. The best thing,
why is she not very dead?
Yeah.
Earlier on,
yeah. The best thing about this film, in my opinion, is the introduction of Florence Pugh's character.
Yeah, he's great.
Florence Pugh is a gem, and I'm so excited to see her like flourish as an actress in general. She's so good in everything I've ever seen her in. And now that she's going to be essentially the new Black Widow, I assume that's what's going to happen. I'm very excited for that.
Yeah.
And I think she's really charismatic and such fun to watch. She has the best lines in the film. Her character is somebody who I can see from the discussions all across the internet. People have really taken to her already.
Yeah.
So I'm ready for that. But I thought the film was such a disappointment.
Well, I like it better than you, but I'm not going to fight you on it because I think, you know, it is clearly flawed.
You don't know everything about me. I've lived a lot of lives. Before I was an Avenger. Before I got this family. I made mistakes. Choosing between what the world wants you to be. And who you are.
Number four. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. And I have to say it like that because I keep wanting to call it The Hitman and Her, or The Hitman's
right.
Bodyguard's Wife, or
did you think of the Hitman's Bodyguard?
I have no memory of seeing
right.
it. I actually had to look up my review of it to remind myself that I wasn't very impressed. I mean, it just gone. I do this now. If somebody says, what do you think of it? Did I see it? I Google to see whether I wrote a review of it, and then I read the thing. Yeah, it was like, I wasn't, the first time around, put it this way, I wasn't on tenterhooks waiting for a sequel.
Sure, nobody
and
was.
The worst thing about about the hitman's wife's bodyguard is that it's got all these, it's got stars, it's got locations, it's got stuff, it's got explosions, it's got things, and it is thunderously dull. And Salma Hayek, who is the kind of, you know,
the new addition.
Seriously, somebody must have said, well, Salma, what we'd like you to do for this role is scream. We'd just like you to shriek every single line. Doesn't matter what it is, just say it at the top of your voice. Really,
because that's funny.
Because that's funny. And it is like a film shouting funny at you for its entire running time. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was preposterous nonsense. Loads of stuff. No enjoyment, just rubbish. And I was kind of quite pleased to see that in terms of its sort of chart position, it came in and then went straight out.
Yeah,
no, I'm not touching. It's like Ray Winston, you can't kill me because I smell.
Do you know that. Do you know what as well? I haven't seen it.
But you kind of have.
Sure, I definitely have because I've seen the trailer and I've seen enough. But it's another sort of example of how Ryan Reynolds struggles to find things that work outside of... Like, he's found Deadpool now, and people love him for it. And I like the Deadpool movies enough, and I'm again, excited to see how that gets implemented into the Disney world. Like, how are they going to make that work? I just think that Ryan Reynolds... even this new one that's coming out, obviously nobody's seen it yet, but it should have been out over a year ago... Free Guy that Ryan Reynolds is in looks, again, like not my cup of tea. It just looks like I just think Ryan Reynolds just struggles to find vehicles that work for him and his sensibilities and his sense of humour.
Other than Deadpool.
Yeah.
He has had a tremendous year. Michael Price is the bodyguard of the year.
Woo!
Is he a relative of yours?
God, no. Darius Kincaid, the hitman, wanted for like a zillion murders around the world.
And how often do you have this dream?
Just once.
Well, that's not
a night.
Right. I'm thinking you need to forget bodyguarding.
Okay, what's your number four?
My number four, we're going to stick with Marvel and then we're going to move on from this, is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is another one of their TV shows. I think I liked it the least out of all of the ones that I've mentioned.
Okay.
I was mostly disappointed by it because it has such a potential to do something really interesting, and it kind of does it, but it mostly sidelines it. It's basically the journey of like Sam becoming the new Captain America, and the Winter Soldier battling with his demons and essentially trying to sort of put to bed the fact that he was a murderer, but for hire, and he wasn't actually present for it, but he's still got all the memories and he's hurt very, very real people.
Interesting.
But it sort of doesn't do it.
Okay.
Let's start with the Winter Soldier aspect of it. It introduces the idea that he's in therapy and he's trying to reconcile for what he's done. He's even befriended the father of a son that he murdered when he was the Winter Soldier. And that scene, when at the end of the whole series, when he actually finally tells him about it, it doesn't hold on the scene. It doesn't let you be there in the moment and really feel how difficult this is. It just sort of briefly skips past it and goes, I guess that's been dealt with now.
Okay.
And that was really disappointing. But the real disappointment for me was they introduced this really interesting character called Isaiah, who is an older black man who a long time ago was also a super soldier akin to Captain America, and nobody knows about him, and there's these stories about how he did similar things to Captain America, but he was imprisoned for it and Captain America was glorified for it. And it's just like a really nice parable to what goes on in the real world and how institutionalized racism exists and it exists in the superhero world as well. And Isaiah puts it to Sam, you shouldn't want to be Captain America. And there's this really interesting conflict at the center of it. Like, should this man want to take up this mantle? Should he want to represent the country that doesn't represent him? And it's such a, not even a C or a D plot. It's such a, brief... And it feels like that should have been the central conflict of the show. But really, they start doing this thing about these terrorists called the Flag Smashers, who are going to blow up something and destroy some things and take some things. We're going to do this because it's right. And I can barely remember what their plot was, but they gave them so much screen time. And it just felt like what I was worried when I said about WandaVision being so good, and it wasn't what I thought Marvel Television was going to be. Okay. This was exactly what I thought Marvel Television was going to be, and it feels like you could absolutely skip it, and the exact same. You'd pick up the next Captain America movie, and you know exactly what's going on.
Symbols are nothing without the women and men that give them meaning. We need someone to inspire us again.
The world's more complicated now.
You're never gonna stop. This world is ours. There's no going back.
It doesn't have to be a war.
It already is.
All right, well, it sounds to me like that is not good. However, I have to say, my number three, we're in a whole other world of not good. So my number three is music.
Music, just music. In general.
Yeah, no, yes.
I've hated music this year.
So music, which is the feature
film. You just
film,
found out about music.
It's great. Not it's a like fan. Notes. It's marvellous. So music, which is the feature film debut by Sia.
I am aware of this.
You would be aware of it because there was so much fuss about it. Kate Hudson is a recovering alcoholic and drug dealer. She's unexpectedly required to care for her younger sibling, who's called Music.
Brilliant.
Who is a young woman with autism who had previously been living with her gran, and Music is played by Maddie Ziegler.
Yep.
And
who was dancing in all of Sia's music videos.
Yes. And it is the worst, most inappropriately gurning performance. And the film, it's so misjudged. It's so woefully misjudged. And a lot of the neurodiverse community were saying, why couldn't you have got a neurodiverse actor to do this? And Sia said, well, you know, I tried, but I couldn't. And then later on said, actually, yes, I take on... basically ended up apologising for the movie.
Right.
And believe me, it would be a very long apology to apologise for a movie that's that bad. What we do see is these weird fancy sequences in which we're meant to see inside her world, which are expressed through the medium of modern dance, and reminded me of nothing so much as the alternative car park mime artist thing that Rowan Atkinson did. I am a mime. My body is a tool. And it's terrible. The film is so bad, you can't believe that anybody allowed it to be released. Of course, nominated for Golden Globes.
No.
Yep. It's just astonishingly terrible. It's stupid. It's offensive. It's awful. You know, you said that thing about with the Bo Burnham, you know, it's all bangers, no clangers.
Yeah.
This is all clangers, no bangers. You know that song, you know, you can't stop the music? In this case, you absolutely have to.
That's
my number three.
I don't really like to judge things solely by this, but it has got 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It has 8? Where did the 8% come from? I mean, for heaven's sake, who gave it 8?
She can understand everything you are saying to her. And if you are happy, press this.
I'm upset.
Very funny, troublemaker.
She sees the world in a completely different way from us.
We're about to have a pool party.
I am happy.
Can do this.
I'm gonna help her just like she helps me. And I'm actually learning how to love because I love her.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Jack, your number three.
My number three is something I also have seen in July,
okay.
And I'm bending the rules.
Okay, fine.
It is the new film Stillwater.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Which you haven't seen yet.
No, this is the Matt Damon film, right?
Yes, Matt Damon. It's directed by Tom McCarthy, who did Spotlight.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This film, it doesn't know what it is. And actually, it's been only like 3 or 4 days since I've seen it. And when I watched it, I wasn't bored. I was perplexed. You know what you were saying earlier about how you were trying to figure out this horror film's tone?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a real, like, positive thing about it, is it was keeping you on the edge of your seat and you were wondering, you know, you didn't really feel safe.
Yeah.
This film, I couldn't figure out what the tone was at any point. So much is going on in it. And I think the fundamental flaw in what it is that Tom McCarthy is spending so much time trying to get you to empathize and care about the characters, but they are doing such bizarre things, and such bizarre huge things are happening. And it's got like a murder mystery at the sort of center of it, but then also like some huge Prisoners-esque things happen. You know, the Prisoners, yeah, the Denis Villeneuve film, yeah. Like some dark things like that happen, but it's also the story of a man trying to have a second chance at family and learning to sort of like be there for other people and not mess things up. Abigail Breslin is also in it, and I like Abigail Breslin a lot, but there's a scene in this as well which is not, she's not great in it. Like, it's a scene where, because it's the writing, the dialogue isn't great, to be honest. There's a bit where she has to basically tell her dad off and say, "You've messed my life up, I'm really mad at you, and I never want to see you again." And that's basically what she says, but she just shouts it the whole time, and it's the shouty shouty scene where daughter tells dad, "You are bad." And it just missed all the marks for me. And
okay.
I thought it was like misjudged in the way that it was directed. And I think that if it was more like pulpy David Fincher Gone Girl, and it embraced the fact that it's a bit nuts,
yeah,
it might have worked a little bit better. I'm not actually sure even if it's based on a true story. If it is, I'll be very surprised, because it's so incredibly bizarre what happens. And maybe that's why it's so bizarre, because it is based on a true story. But this is the thing as well, like, Matt Damon's very good in it. Like, his accent seems pretty great. He's taking it very seriously. I don't think it's based on a true story. I thought it was nuts.
Okay.
And
well,
I'm excited to hear what you think of it, because I really wasn't taken with it.
I haven't seen it. I am kind of looking forward to it, because that, the way you're describing it, makes it sound very odd.
The day you left for Marseille, I drove to the airport. I went to the gift shop and I saw this necklace. It was gold. It said Stillwater on it. I thought it'd be a little piece of home to take with you. Some folks are born
made to weather fire. You're in Marseille for a gift?
Yeah, I visit my daughter.
You're the father of the girl? The American student?
Yes, ma'am.
Allison came here for college, and that's where she met this girl, Lena. One night, she found Lena dead and called the police. All they cared about was Allison sleeping with some Arab girl.
I loved her.
I know you did.
But everybody thinks that I killed her.
We have exhausted every possible legal action.
Is the lawyer not helping you?
I'm doing it myself for now.
I could help.
What's your name?
Maya.
Maya. Oh, that's nice.
She's very protective with me.
You seen that guy before?
No one would talk to you, trust me. I'm not from here. It's not safe for you.
She's my little girl.
Dad, please.
I'm not going to give up.
I have to say that considering we're now into the, you know, the very top of the, I think if that's number three.
Well, like you said, I mean, I avoid the ones.
Yeah, of course you do. So here's my number two, and I guarantee you haven't seen this. Shoplifters of the World, the film that Morrissey deserves.
Right.
So this is weird. It's like it's directed by Stephen Kijak, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He made Scott Walker, 30th Century Man, which was really, really good.
This is worse than music.
Yeah. This is worse than music. Okay. It says at the beginning the film is based on true intentions.
What?
Okay. So, exactly. So, the story was Nick, who's producing this, literally just stuck his fingers
down
his
neck.
So, the story in real life, there was a real life story that, you know, a Smiths fan went to a radio station armed with the idea of holding up the radio station to get them to just play Smiths music. Okay. So, it's Airheads. Okay. In real life, what happened being a Smiths fan was he didn't do it. He turned up and didn't do it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But in the film, what happens is the Ella Coltrane, you know, who's so brilliant in Boyhood,
yeah,
goes into the thing, you know, with the thing, and he forces the DJ who's playing like rock music to play the Smith songs. And during the course of the thing, the Smith songs echo around, and people, there's so many Smith songs that the world starts to change for the better. It's a film in which large sections of the dialogue are literally lyrics from or titles of Smith songs. You know, people saying things like, this isn't a direct, with saying things like, you know, I started something I couldn't, and it's terrible. It's absolutely brain-scrapingly awful. The dialogue is rubbish. I mean, I used to like the Smiths. You know, I was a big fan of the Smiths.
Oh, me too. I literally was just thinking as you were talking, like, why do good things have to be corrupted over time?
Why
like
does Morrissey
this?
Have to open his mouth ever? Oh. I mean, the words.
I struggle to even put the Smiths on now without.
I know I can't. No, I threw out all the Smiths records.
Oh, isn't that such a shame?
It is, but I don't care because Morrissey's an idiot. I mean, Morrissey, you know, the man who went on television wearing a badge supporting that far right group for Britain. Morrissey, the guy who said that the treatment of Tommy Robinson, was shocking. Said it was shocking. Tommy Robinson,
fuck
incidentally,
off.
just lost the court case. He was ordered to pay £100,000 in libel damages.
And now he's bankrupt.
And yeah,
don't brilliant. Make me laugh.
I know. So you know, but it's even if Morrissey wasn't the biggest twat on the face of the earth, the movie itself would be awful because it's awful. Firstly, the movie appears to have been made without any kind of awareness of how
who Morrissey is now.
Poisoned. I think
is Morrissey in it?
No, but Morrissey gave it his blessing by saying, "Oh, you know, I laughed, I cried, I ate my own head," you know, and I genuinely thought it was the movie that he deserved because it is the second worst thing I have seen this year.
Yeah, okay,
and. Every single bit of it, I was watching it thinking, yeah, I can see why Morrissey likes this. It is like a film which has got its tongue so far up the Smith's backside that it cannot see the wood for the trees.
It's such a
misjudged. Badly written. And as I said, in real life, what happened was the guy didn't do it. Why not? Because he's a fucking Smiths fan.
Fucking hell. Based on real intentions.
Based on real intentions.
The Smiths broke up.
What?
You know, the Smiths may be dead, but all the albums are still here.
I wish there was a way to get all the posers in this town to take notice.
I did have an idea. Something that would go down in musical history.
Impress me.
What do you want?
There is a young man in the radio station pointing a gun. So, for the rest of the night, I will be bringing you the music of the Smiths.
Don't touch that dial. This night, we'll open our eyes.
I'm just out to have a good time. All the rest is propaganda.
Jack, okay. Your number two.
My number two is an American pickle.
Oh, wow, okay.
The Seth Rogen film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
What did you think?
I didn't hate it.
I thought it was terrible.
Okay.
I thought it was such a bad film. I was expecting it to be, like, a bit fun. I like, me and my housemates just put it on for a laugh. and it just wasn't funny. That's the biggest crime. Yeah, yeah. The biggest crime is that, I mean, I could get into the nitpicks of things, but it just wasn't funny. And then it almost has a similar thing to, you know, I said about Luca has like this storyline that just for some reason starts happening. American Pickle does the same thing where this, I mean, for people who haven't seen it, essentially what happens is, and it's a funny idea, and this is kind of goes back to a rule I've heard before, I can't remember who this is attributed to, but if the film concept sounds funny, it's not a funny film.
Okay.
Like, if you take most of Adam Sandler's concepts, they sound like funny films, but they, as we all know, aren't funny films. And in American Pickle, basically what happens is, a long, long time ago, or like classic Seth Rogen falls into some pickle brine and comes out in the year 2019, I actually think it is.
Yeah.
And he's been pickled for that long, and so he's basically travelled to the future in pickle brine. Hilarious, almost Austin Powers level of like ridiculousness. But it like doesn't treat it that way, and it never really, and no one ever really seems that blown away by the fact that this has happened. Like, and Seth Rogen just turns up and he's like, oh, I guess you're my grandfather, you can come live with me for a bit. And then they start competing for something, I can't remember what it is, but I really did not like it at all. I thought it was super terrible.
I love the fact there's a rule, which is that if the pitch sounds funny, it's not funny.
Yeah.
That's very good.
In old country of Shlupsk, I am ditch digger. As far as jobs in Shlupsk go, it's pretty good. We are the Grinbounds, and we have American dream. I find good job in pickle factory. Sarah, I make this vow. 100 years, our family will prosper. And then one day, everything changed.
It's been 100 years. The pickle brine preserved him perfectly.
You're too old to lose it. The world has changed. Everyone I know is gone.
You were able to track down a great grandson.
Greenbaum. Greenbaum. This is nuts.
Walk past the cafe, which you don't need when you live to.
Your parents, where are they? They passed away. It was a car crash. He will tell me everything of their deaths, how their bodies died, their faces as the life left. We will bond over our pain.
Mm-hmm. So my number one, okay, is a movie for which the pitch is, it's a film about David Bowie in which not only, you know where
oh,
we're going.
Oh, you've seen it.
Stardust.
Oh, you've seen it.
Oh, yeah, I had to. It's my job, Jack.
I but I didn't know it was even out yet.
Yeah. It came and went. It came and went.
Oh,
so, so the story is, it's basically, it's a, like an unauthorized retelling of David Bowie's 1971 American tour. And it says at the beginning, after that, you know, based on true intention, it says, what follows is, brackets, mostly fiction, to which I just want to go, mostly.
mostly.
It's Johnny Flynn playing a character who is
such
called,
a shame. I love Johnny
so
Flynn.
I love Johnny Flynn.
Why he's would play, he do this?
He's playing a character who is called David Bowie, but they can't use any of David Bowie's songs because the Bowie estate doesn't want to.
Yeah,
you know,
I remember Duncan yeah. Jones like tweeted being like, it's interesting that this film is being made because they can't use his songs.
They can't use any. So the best part of it is, it's meant to be the Man Who Fell to Earth tour, okay? So firstly, they can't use any of his songs, so all they can do is have him doing cover versions, so like doing Jacques Brel, doing, you know, My Death, and doing that sort of stuff. But at one point, they a journalist has to quote to him the lyrics of the Man Who Sold the World. And I keep saying The Man Who Fell to Earth, The Man Who Sold the World. And because they can't use The Man Who Sold the World, he says to Johnny Flynn as David Bowie, let's talk about the lyrics of your song. You say, yesterday upon the stairs, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish that man would go away. And you're thinking, that's a really famous poem. Does nobody know that's a really famous poem? I don't get what. What's if that's not the? Why didn't you just cut this scene out?
Because if they cut that scene out, Mark, they'd have to start cutting out other scenes, and then there'd be no film left.
Nothing left, and the. It's. I mean, believe me, I've seen a lot of bad pop movies in my time. There is Mark Maron's in it, who I
like.
Yeah,
I like Mark Maron as well.
Absolutely terrible. It's. It's a film that makes really heavy weather. It's got, a whole psychological thing about, well, he's terrified of schizophrenia, and he's terrified of this, and he's terrified of that. And you go, yeah, no. And And then there's this performance of Mark Bolan. The guy who's playing Mark Bolan is called James Cade. And it's like, it's almost as if they went, the thing about Mark Bolan was he was really charismatic and really kind of attractive. So let's find somebody who is completely uncharismatic. And every time he opens his mouth, you want to put your fingers in your ears just to stop hearing him. And I mean, it's just, I love Bowie. But even if you didn't like Bowie, you'd think this is unfair.
It just feels a little bit like it would only be made by somebody who didn't care enough about David Bowie's legacy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like if you really liked David Bowie's legacy, you wouldn't make this.
Yeah. No, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
And do you want to hear a nice thing about it?
Go on.
It made $9,000.
Hello.
Name?
David Bowie. 12 singles, every one a total failure, except Space Oddity.
The record company finds the album too weird for the ex.
I need to be known. I need them to know me.
There's only one guy at Mercury who doesn't hate your new record with every bone in his body.
David Bowie, I presume. Ron Oberman, Mercury Records.
We got a packed couple weeks coming up. Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, and then out to L.A.
I think we can make it work. All it takes is one believer to change the world. And we got two.
Two?
You believe in yourself, don't you? I think you're going to be the biggest star in America.
This is a Queen family rock station, so keep it safe.
Tell me about the new album.
What's it all about?
It's about the years I spent dressing in women's clothes and getting laid.
You want to know why it's not working? If anyone dares to ask you about your actual work, you just do the mystical mime act.
There is no authentic me. It's just fear.
Well, then, be someone else. Be someone else.
Okay, what's your number one? You can't top that. What's your
Fast
number one?
Fast and Furious 9.
Okay, fine.
Fucking ridiculous.
This year, the car went to space.
Oh, they shouldn't have done it. They shouldn't have done it. And like the way they did it, it just happened. There was no tension. There was no nothing. They just went to space.
Yes.
Oh.
And how did they go to space? By strapping a rocket onto a car.
Unbelievable. And just little things now. It's getting ridiculous. I know it's becoming almost like a fucking parody. But the family thing is getting ridiculous.
Family.
Family. It's, I ain't got friends. I've got family.
Family.
And John Cena is my long lost brother. Is
family.
He?
Is that true?
John Cena, for the whole that time, has been your long lost brother.
You never mentioned him before.
And the whole film is made, and it's got these intercutting sequences that belong in a different film, where it's showing young Vin Diesel and young John Cena having this sort of like rose-tinted, like Michael Bay-esque brotherly like childhood with each other, and like the story of how their father died and who was responsible for it. Oh, and just it's just dull, and it's getting boring now. I thought it was going to be. I really liked Fast and Furious 8.
Okay.
I really liked Fast and Furious 8. I didn't like the Statham and the Rock one.
Yeah.
Hobbs and Shaw. Didn't like that. I thought the beginning was fine, and then it just sort of became nonsense. It feels like they're going, how can we top the last one? I get magnets? Should we do magnets?
Magnets on a plane.
Magnets, and we'll go to space?
How will we get across this great chasm? Piece of string? That'll work. Yeah.
Oh my
the other
God.
Thing about this character...
I don't know what we're doing. What are we doing?
This character who died is now back because...
and it means
because
nothing.
Because Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, and
he didn't actually die. You go, hang on. I feel like, you know, Kathy Bates in Misery. He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodie car, all right?
It just
didn't happen. But it's rubbish.
It's so rubbish.
It is so rubbish. I saw it in a cinema. There's part of me that kind of enjoyed when they strap the rocket up to the car and they go into space and then they come out of the meeting up with the space station. It's a car.
Do you know as well that, like, you know your thing about saying, like, if you've got the money to make a big film, why also not make it good?
Yes.
If you want to do Car Goes to Space, and this is all supposed to be really silly, why don't you think to make it also good? Like, it just feels like such a waste of, like, potential to me. Because I would be so into that. I'd be, like, cheering and laughing. It was nonsense.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be too mean, but Natalie Emmanuel, who's the British actress who's in it. She was in Game of Thrones. Yeah. I don't think she knows what she's saying in this film. It feels like she's just been handed the script that day, yes. And maybe she had been, yeah. And she's just reciting the lines then and there.
Yeah. It's like learning to drive, which we see her doing on screen. Yes.
Yeah. The best thing about seeing Fast and Furious 9 in the cinema was seeing the opening sequence, I think, or the opening sequence of the next Jurassic World. Did you see this?
No.
I am not really a fan of any Jurassic Park sequels, and they shouldn't have made them, but there was something about almost the way that the opening sequence of this next Jurassic Park movie is done is almost like it's a nature documentary for dinosaurs. Like, it starts however many million years ago, basically filming dinosaurs is like you'd film animals in the wild.
Okay.
And it was in IMAX, so, and I was so taken with it.
So just to summarise, the best thing about Fast and Furious was something that wasn't in Fast and Furious.
Yes, it absolutely was. That's how bad it was.
I think you might even have won that round. Well, Jack, thanks. That's been really good fun.
Thank you for allowing me to come in on this prestigious thing that you do every year.
Well, I think we'll do it at the end of the year now. I think that's good. So this is it. If you enjoyed this, thanks for listening. Subscribe, tell your friends, get in touch with us. It's at Kermode on Film, or at Kermode Movie, or at Jack Howard. And Jack, we are still at the festival, because obviously we recorded this on one day in, is it July now? We're in July, but this is obviously people listening to this in August. So we are now going to go and
have a nice time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, let's go and do that.